Like it or not, the senior and elderly population is vulnerable to negligence committed by medical professionals, nursing home and assisted living facilities, pharmaceutical and medical device companies, insurance companies, and everyday individuals and businesses. The Injured Senior Podcast is here to help. Steve Heisler is the creator of the National Injured Senior Law Center and has been advocating for seniors' rights for over 20 years. You have questions, and Steve Heisler has answers. This is the Injured Senior Podcast.
Howdy to our injured senior and aging population community. This is Steve Heisler, founder and CEO of the National Injured Senior Law Center. And you are about to experience another episode of the Injured Senior Podcast. The Injured Senior Podcast is a podcast dedicated to discussing legal and medical issues that are of vital importance and of concern to the senior, elderly, and aging population, and to their children, loved ones, and caregivers. Before we dive into today's show, I want to first thank the National Injured Senior Law Center for their very kind sponsorship of this show. You hear me say this a lot, but there are 100 million plus seniors in the United States today, and that number is growing by the second. That is important because 100 million seniors who have legal issues regarding an injury that they sustained due to the negligence of someone else, they need a place to go. They go to the National Injured Senior Law Center. If you want to learn more about the National Injured Senior Law Center, go to www.injuredseniorhotline.com. So today we have a guest, Roz Jones, who is a leader in the caregiving industry. So before we bring Roz on, you might be asking, well, what exactly is caregiving? Well, it's sort of like what it sounds. According to mmlearn.org, a caregiver is someone who assists with the basic needs and activities of daily living. Now, this includes bathing, grooming, filling prescriptions, shopping for and preparing meals, housekeeping, paying bills, making and providing transportation to medical appointments. So even though it might not be a full-time gig or on behalf of a family member or loved one, you may not consider yourself a caregiver, but if you do it on a regular basis, you are a caregiver. According to the National Alliance for Caregiving in AARP, approximately 34.2 Americans, that's 34.2 million Americans, provided unpaid care to an adult age 50 or older within the last year. Of these, 15.7 million are caring for Alzheimer's disease or other dementia-type diseases. We talked about dementia on our last episode with Benjamin Surmi, and those statistics do bear out that Alzheimer's and dementia are definitely this country's number one public health crisis. So Roz Jones, as I said, is a leader in the caregiving industry. She is president and CEO of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, which is an organization that provides short and long-term care. Now, Rosalind was working in the corporate world, doing exceptionally well. She then was asked by a friend from church if she could accompany the friend to the hospital for a two-day, for a procedure where she would be in the hospital for 2 days. That turned into a two-week visit, and that's, according to Roz, that's where the journey began into caregiving. She opened Jacksonville's Best Caregivers in 2009. Roz uses her experience and education to provide training to new caregivers and their family members so they are able to best care for their loved ones. Welcome, Roz, to the Injured Senior Podcast. We're so happy to have you here today. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to your community. I am excited.
Well, I'm really excited to have you on, Roz. Looking at your resume, you really have accomplished a lot down there in Jacksonville. I think that you definitely are a major asset to the caregiving industry. I have to let you know, though, before we delve into caregiving, that my mother's name is Roz. So you are definitely in good company. She turns 85 in February, so I love her a lot, and so you definitely already are like my best friend.
Well, you know what? You know what your mother and I also have in common, and I've never shared this publicly on a podcast before, but my birthday is also in February, so your mother and I have a lot in common.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to let her know. It's like, Mom, I've had somebody on the podcast that like is like you almost, you know. So anyway, yeah. So let me ask you this. What was it about that 2-week stay with your friend from church in the hospital that caused you to make a career change and become a leader in the caregiving field?
While I was taking care of that friend, the nurses in the hospital kept saying, Roz, you are taking care of this person like she's related to you, and you have all the qualities of a nurse, of a caregiver, someone that we really need in this field. And I kept saying no, and they kept saying yes. So I decided to start in a sitting position, and that's what they told me. They said start in the sitting position at the hospital as a sitter. And I started as a sitter and loved it, and my life changed, you know, between Sunday to Sunday, just from, you know, going and sitting in the hospital, you know, sitting under nurses, letting people teach me, learning, you know, like on-the-job training, even before I got trained to be in the nursing field.
So it was just a perfect fit, and you had no idea that this was going to happen.
That was not my plan of action for my life. You know, like everybody else, you know, I was going to grow up, get married, go to college, have 2.3 children, have the white picket fence. But just like caregiving, it changes your life in the moment. You know, you hope that you can gradually go into caregiving with your loved one or parents or friend, but sometimes a catastrophic accident, illness, COVID, anything can happen to where you are in a position to take care of someone. And even in your introduction, everybody said, oh, I'm not a caregiver. We all have been caregivers, and I'm so glad you said that, was because if we did things such as babysitting our brothers and sisters, we were caregivers even before the word caregiving came out. If we took our grandparents dinner, lunch, picked up medication, you know, took them to the doctor, we were already caregivers already. But a lot of us didn't have the term caregiver. Now, since we know what the term caregiver is, many of us have been caregiving since we were either in high school, junior high school, but we are all caregivers.
So it's probably almost second nature to, for a lot of people, to do the caregiving activities or tasks or what have you. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. It comes automatically, because a lot of times when, you know, for us who are older siblings, our mother used to say, well, take your brother out of the crib, change the diaper, feed him. We were a caregiver, even though we were told to do it, or we were volunteered by our mom. Even though we were volunteered by our parents to take care of our siblings, we were already being trained and nurtured how to be caregivers.
Yeah, I had a babysitter when I was in junior high school. Me and my brother, my parents would go out, and he was... caregiving would be a kind of maybe a stretch of the word. What you know, he used to chase us mm-hmm. around the house, and he was more like a playmate, you know. But let me ask you this: what is the role in ever since caregiving got the term, it became like a business, or you know, it became more than just babysitting or just helping out mom and dad. What is the role, in your opinion, what is the role of the caregiver?
The role of the caregiver is to come in and either monitor your loved one's, let's say, decline in their illness, you know, to monitor that the mail comes in, to monitor that they get their medicine and that they eat correctly. So sometimes it begins just as monitoring. I'm checking on you every day, you know, that type of situation. Then caregiving, as the disease progresses or the person declines, then it becomes sometimes a little more hands-on. So now physically, we have to go to the house and get the mail and pay the bills or drop off food. Then as the disease declines even more, it could be even more hands-on where you either hire a caregiver, they come into your home, they go to an independent living facility or an assisted living facility. And the care can range from sometimes a few months to a few decades. So the caregiving can range. And sometimes it's not even progressive. Sometimes it's suddenly because of a heart attack, an accident, a slip, a fall. So there's a lot of incidents where you can become a caregiver either on a short term or on a long term basis.
Okay, so 34 million Americans provided unpaid care to adults 50 and over last year. Now, would these seniors who are getting the care, would they otherwise, if they were not getting the care from an unpaid person, maybe it's a family member or not, but if not for them, would these people receiving the care otherwise be in assisted living or a nursing home?
Yeah, usually they would either try to go ahead and put them in an assisted living if they have if they don't have family. What happened is a lot of people know that they will either become a ward of the state and the state will give them a guardian and they could either live in an assisted living or they can live with another extended family member, such as a friend or a distant cousin or a nephew or a niece, or they would have to go into a facility, so far as care. And if they don't have someone, then a lot of times they can't even speak for themselves or they're afraid to ask for help because they feel like their house is going to be taken away, their car is going to be taken away, their independence and identity is going to be taken away from them, and someone is going to take over, and then they have no control of their life. So a lot of times they will not ask for help, and they will begin to isolate themselves out of fear.
Well, let me ask you this. So is caregiving in a sense, replacing the assisted living facility or nursing home, now that it's become more of an industry, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, sir. Caregiving is definitely taking the place of the nursing home, particularly because of technology and medicine is able to keep people living longer and keeping them healthy longer. The assisted living facilities don't have people coming in. People are not becoming part of that community in the early stage of their disease. It's usually in the latter stage of their disease, if at all, when they start to check in. So because technology and medicine is able to keep them, you know, a little more healthy because they have been more active and exercising. So there, you know, the need for a facility in the beginning stages of an illness is no longer needed because you can age at home up until the point to where you're, you know, maybe you can't remember or you're not able to feed yourself. And so that's usually the point to where you make a decision. Do we put them in a nursing home or do we bring them home to live with us? So the facilities aren't needed as soon. It's then needed more later than sooner because of a lot of times you have family members that can step in or the person will try to live in their home as long as possible.
So you would agree that obviously caregivers are not skilled. It's not skilled nursing care, correct?
Exactly. It's not. The care is usually from a family member that has probably really no type of training other than probably babysitting their brother and sister or taking someone to the doctor, you know, so far as the daily, you know, bathing. No, they don't have that training, but they're trying. They're trying to, please this person or take care of this person or they feel like out of obligation, I'm supposed to do this. And so they're trying their best to make sure that this person lives an independent life as long as possible. But most, I'm going to say 99.9% of the families that take care have no training at all, none whatsoever. And nothing is wrong with that. Please, please understand that. Nothing is wrong with that. They are just stepping in because they know that this is my mom and my dad. I need to help. I need to do something. You know, so that's where most of you are turning in. And then I'm so glad you brought those numbers up, because now if you only have 34% of the population that can take care of their loved one, what's happening to the other, you know, 60, you know, the other 66% that don't have people that can take care of them? And for those family members who can take care of that 34%, they can do only between 4 to 8 hours a week of care for their loved ones. So what's happening the rest of the day when they're not there?
Right. And if not for the caregiving industry or just caregiving in general, a lot of those individuals who are getting the care would have to go into assisted living or nursing home. Is that correct?
Exactly. Particularly because you have a lot of people who are either only children or didn't have any children, or if they had an only child, the child died before them. You know, we have a lot of people in, you know, the LGBT communities who don't have loved ones. So there's a lot of reasons why people will have, you know, either I don't have anyone to take care of me, or I have to go into the facility because of, you know, certain circumstances that have occurred and I don't have anyone to help me.
Got it. Can you tell our injured senior listenership, what can caregivers, and I think you might have answered this already, but kind of like in a nutshell, what can caregivers give that's not given in a facility? And I guess I'm not trying to answer your question, but would that be like more love or just more attention, that type of thing?
Right. I'm going to say letter E, all of the above. The one-on-one, you know, direct contact with that person, the more hands-on, the more human contact, that person's quality of life is extended anywhere from 3 to 5 years. But when they go into the facility and the only contact you're getting with an employee is when they, you know, pull the trash and, you know, give you a bath, you know, that's not enough to sustain your life. That's not enough. So them being at home gives them a better quality of life, an extended quality of life, you know, so far as bathing, feeding, because when you're at home with family, they know what you like to eat. They know everything, you know, that you don't like and you like. When you go into the facility, you hope and pray that someone will, you know, step up to the plate and say, hey, I'm going to make sure that, you know, you get the attention that you need. And you have to also remember, too, that a lot of times when you're in the facility, there's, you know, there's a 10-to-1 ratio or a 15-to-1 ratio to employees. So the employees can't spend the time, versus when you're at home, you know, we can go to a movie, we can go to the grocery store, we can get our hair done. There's a lot of things at home that you can do versus that you can't do at the facility. So that's right. Why the home, being at home, is so much more important. And that's why the private duty and the home health care industry is booming, is because we can give that type of one-on-one attention that the nursing homes can't.
But is caregiving, is that including our health, home health care aides and the like, are they included in the umbrella of caregiving or the caregiving industry?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, right. They are. Yeah. So the home health, private duty, home health agencies that have people that can come in and do one-on-one, all of that is included. Family, private duty, and home health agencies. We are the ones that can come in, and we are kind of like, I want to say the last stop before they go into a facility. And, you know, we can take care of them all the way up to they get to the skilled part. And that is usually when a lot of times more medications need to be monitored, or pain management, yeah, things that relatives really cannot handle at home.
Let me ask you just quickly, is it covered by Medicare?
Medicare will cover some home health and they will only cover between 8 to 12 hours a week max. 8 to 12 hours a week. If you are under the VA, they will give you, I think it's $1,200 a month of care. If you're either your spouse or the service person was in an active duty war, you are eligible for those type of services. Now, with Medicare, if you get towards you when you're getting towards the end of life and you are quickly declining, they will extend those hours from 8 to 12, maybe from 12 to 20 hours. They may give you an extra 8 hours. But then by that time, hospice usually steps in, which is Medicare Part, your Part A, and they'll step in and start to supplement what the family is not able to do.
Great. But do you think that it's that Medicare is going to continue to or eventually start paying more for home health care and to try to give an option to the person who is being cared for to, hey, in the long run, it probably makes it economically a lot better for just everyone, because if you don't have to go into a nursing home and you can be cared for at home and you're not going to get sicker or it's going to help you with your just with your goal of getting better. People are getting better probably, like you said, when they're getting more attention, more love and whatever. So ultimately that would be saving Medicare money, right?
It would be saving Medicare money. And if they could stay at home and if a relative could stay at home, that would be great. But the biggest concern is when a elderly person is sick or injured, that's a financial impact to the caregiver. So do I go to work or do I stay home and take care of my loved one? You know, so this is what the problem is. It would be great if Medicare, if I could pay the person who's taking care of me to stay home. Medicare is not going to do that unless we have some great lobbyists or some great people that come up and say, hey, we're going to do this. As you know, Medicare is 65 years old this year. So unless we get some work at home programs for those caregivers that have to give up their job, that's going to be the only way that a caregiver can stay at home. The caregivers that have to take care of their loved one, it impacts the work industry by over $250 million a year. The person who's taking care of that loved one loses anywhere from 10 to 20% of their salary because they have to go on FMLA to take care of a loved one. So, it would be wonderful if Medicare could pay or if we could find some type of job readiness to make sure that if the caregiver does have to stay at home, that they can transition and stay at home, keep their job, and still take care of their loved one. If that could happen in a perfect world. But we know the world is not perfect, and Medicare is not going to do that.
Well, that's food for thought, though. we're gonna have to take you out of your role as running Jacksonville's Best Caregivers and send you up to D.C., Washington D.C., so you can lobby those politicians. I know they're not going to mess
that
around
would be
with you,
wonderful.
Ross. Yeah. There's so much to do in so little time, right?
Exactly.
Now, Roz, can you tell our listenership how caregiving has been affected by COVID-19? Obviously, this is the biggest pandemic of this young century and the century before since 1918. So how is caregiving being touched by this?
It's really hit us, particularly for those of us who are in the front line. All of my employees, we get tested weekly. Now, the state was only requiring us at first to do it monthly. Then they went biweekly. Then they went weekly. And so taking that time weekly to go and get tested is, you know, sometimes it's a 2 to 4 hour process because you have to stand in line, number one. Number two, the other precaution we have to take is we have to wear the mask. We have to wear a shield. Sometimes we have to wear full PPE depending on what facility we go in. So those are extra expenses, and not only extra expenses, but it's an anxiety for us. And then it also causes a problem when we go in to take care of the loved one, because now we can't touch them as much as we used to. Because so now that portion of the human touch that was keeping them alive, they don't have that anymore. So now those people who were used to us helping them stand up and they could feel us, now they have to feel a piece of plastic in between that, you know, that person. So it is sending a lot of our seniors into depression, into anxiety, and it's even causing some of them to die, because in these facilities, they were not built for isolation. And so what has happened is the states are mandating that they stay in their rooms. They can't come out in the hallways. And when they went into these communities, they went in because of the community part. Because I could be with people there my age and I could play billiards or bridge or poker or dominoes, or we could go out on these field trips, all of that's been cut off.
My aunt is 90 years old in an assisted living facility in Brookline, Massachusetts, and she is basically a shut-in now. Now, I think it had been loosened, but initially she couldn't come out of her apartment. I mean, they gave her like an hour, almost like she was in prison. They give you like an hour to walk around or whatever, or go outside. But, you know, so it's just horrifying to the senior and elderly population.
And that's it. And then when COVID first came out, you know, they put out this blanket statement: if you are elderly, we're not going to treat you. We're going to treat people who are, you know, like 60 and under. But anybody that's, you know, maybe 80 and over, if you have the COVID, we're going to let you die. So now the fear is, you know, if I have the COVID, I'm not going to get treated. You know, so that was in their mind, that stigma. So now that stigma is gone. However, the loneliness is still there. The human touch is not there. You know, they're still being isolated. They have to eat in their rooms. They can't eat in the dining rooms. They have no contact with their families. You know, Zoom and FaceTime can only do so much, but the human contact, the touch, is what these people need. And now, like you said, you're treating them like they're in prison. Okay, at 12 o'clock, you can go outside for 30 minutes. You know, if you're on the West Wing, you can go out from 9 to 10. If you're on the East Wing, you can go out from 11 to 12. That's not what these facilities were built for. And now our most valuable population, they're being treated like dogs, like prisoners. This is not fair. This is not fair. It's not fair. No. I'm sorry. If I sound passionate, it angers me. It upsets me that these people that have given us so much history and love and work have been, you know, bottled in and caged in like animals. This is wrong.
You sound like a human being. So I mean, you're spot on that, Roz. Yeah. That's just it's just not. It's inhumane that we're warehousing our seniors and elderly, and especially during COVID, it's gotten even worse.
I have one lady that I take care of. She was in one of the concentration camps. She's Jewish, and mm-hmm. she said, "I survived the concentration camp, but I don't know if I can survive COVID."
Right. They at least got to have a lot of interaction with their concentration camp mates, I guess.
Exactly.
Call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. She said, at least I was able to see other people. She said, here, they wouldn't even let us out of our rooms. Every time they come out, go back in your room, eat in your room. They can't even eat together. She said, at least in the concentration camp, we could share a piece of bread. She said, I can't do anything. So I just wanted to share that. I'm sorry.
That's awesome. And you are spot on. You're definitely spot on that, Roz. And, it's terrible. Let me ask you this. So caregivers who want to go into a long-term care facility and not necessarily a family member, but are caregivers allowed in? I mean, they're not staff of the facility. So are they allowed to go in right now?
Yes, private
with
duty
COVID?
Yes, sir. Yes, our private duty caregivers and caregivers of agencies, we have to take a COVID test. We have to prove to the facility where we are going in to take care of that person that we have tested negative, and we have to follow their procedures, their policies. So we have to come in with a mask, we have to come in with a face shield. We have to show that we've passed the test. We have to take our temperature, our O2, and we have to sign a waiver of agreement stating that, you know, we've taken a test and that if anything happens to us while we're on a facility, that we do not hold the facility to any harm or anything that comes because we have entered into that community.
Okay. So caregivers that are family members and are not home health aides, so they're out of luck. They just can't go in, correct?
Yes, sir. Only, and the only time they can go in is if the person is getting ready to die. If they're on hospice and they have just a few days or a few weeks to live, then the family can come in only under that. And, you know, they have started loosening some of the policies and letting them come in. But now they've pulled that, you know, they pulled that back and gone back to for emergency purposes only. And you have to, of course, take a test. You have to show them where you're clear. And mm-hmm. follow the same policies and procedures as if you were a caregiver. But for right now, they have stopped all families from coming in, particularly now at this time of the broadcast, you know, with everything surging again, they have stopped the family members from coming in again.
Yeah. It's just disgraceful. You know, it just breaks my heart. I can't even imagine if my mother was in an assisted living or a nursing home and I couldn't go in and see her. I my heart just goes out for the person who's being cared for, the senior, the elder, their children, the caregivers. Just, it's horrible. Well, I hate to end on kind of a, you know, a bad note, but you're telling it like it is, and that's what we want to do here on this podcast, Roz. This has been real enlightening. Can you briefly tell our listeners about your website, The Caregivers Cafe?
Sure. We are at thecaregivercafe.net. We have blogs. We also have recently partnered with caregiving.com. And so we will be some of the same information I'm giving you now. I will be writing stories and creating content for caregiving.com. And also, too, we will be doing coaching. Since a lot of people aren't able to, you know, come in, contact one-on-one, we will be doing some virtual coaching to any new and current caregivers. So we will be opening up those type of services. Hopefully by the beginning of the year, we will be offering caregiving coaching services virtually, either one-on-one or by a group. You know, we'll take a group of anywhere from 10 to 15 and offer then one-on-one services as well.
That's great. So if anybody wants, and I've been on the site, and there's just so much wealth of material for potential caregivers, caregivers, you know, just anyone who wants to know more about caregiving. So I highly recommend it, and you definitely should be applauded for for coming up with that website and putting all that great content on there.
Thank you
now,
so
Roz,
much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And by the way, we're going to have you back because there's so many. You're going to be like our caregiving expert, like our guru, who's going to be giving us all types of information and tips about caregiving. So this is not a one and done deal. We're going to have you back.
Absolutely.
So if someone wants to go to the Caregiver Cafe.
It's Caregiver Cafe.net, and they also can look at my YouTube page, which is Jacksonville's Best Caregivers. It's under the name of the company, and I also do some trainings on YouTube as well.
Okay, so are there any other social media platforms you wanted to let our listeners know about that they can find you on?
Those are the two best ones where you would get most information. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn as Roz Roslyn Jones. You know, if you want to go to, you know, more of the business side of me, but for the caregivers, particularly, it's the caregivercafe.net, and then on the website, and then on YouTube is Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, where I post videos at least 2 to 3 times a week on caregiving.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I've got to check some of those out. Because like I said, I've got parents that are, well, my mom's in her mid-80s, and my dad will be 88 in January. So, and I already see that I'm having to get into situations where I've got to do things, take my dad to the doctor. I mean, things that I love to do because I love my mom and my dad. But, you know, I also want to read and see what your advice is and all those different type of situations.
Right. Well, and the next thing we'll talk about is could be caregiver guilt. You know how our parents guilt us into things. So we can talk about that next.
Okay. Well, I'm Jewish, so I got Jewish guilt. I mean, I was halfway out of the womb and I started getting the guilt from my mother. You know, what took you so long? You know, so Roz, I want to thank you.
Yeah.
You're going to come back soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes,
now,
sir.
Yeah,
I will.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Injured Senior and Aging Population Community, thanks for listening to today's episode. I want to again thank Roz Jones for appearing on the show today. She was fantastic. If you love the Injured Senior podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe. Give us a rating or a review on iTunes. If you want to share your story on an upcoming show or have any suggestions or comments about the show, please email me at steve@injuredseniorhotline.com. I answer all emails, my friends. So until next time, it was great spending this time with you. Look forward to next week's show. Stay safe and have a great day. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Injured Senior Podcast with Steve H. Heisler. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. To find out more or to get help anytime, go to InjuredSeniorHotline.com or call 855-622-6530. We'll see you next time.